Hello, this is Guillermo del Toro, and you're listening to Out Now Podcast. Hello.
I was working in my lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, when my monster from his slab began to rise, and then suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hi, hello, how are you?
Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics and jump into mostly spoiler-free review, but this is not one of those episodes. This is another one of our fun horror bonus episodes. We've started this last week, where we talked about slasher films, and we're continuing on with our October month of bonus horror-related episodes, where this week we are going to be talking about monster movies.
Monster movies!
And as we established last week, we like to have our frequent friends and guests of the show here to talk about these various horror genres and what have you. And so joining us again from Joe Blow and Flicks for Fans, he was built by Stan Winston himself. It's Jimmy O.
Dun, 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 dun. I'll be back.
And from Why So Blue and the Cult Cinema Cavalcade podcast, he's gone Bump, Biff, and Brawn in the night. It's Brandon Peters.
Hello. I got nothing. I'm a monster. Monster.
But yeah, so how you doing, guys?
Terrific.
Lovely.
Good. Glad to hear it. Unfortunately,
wonderful.
We still have not been able to fit a right schedule in to get all of us, which would include Jason Coleman back on this podcast, but he's here in spirit once again.
Yeah. I have this theory that they aren't the same person, but Abe and Jason share a Skype account.
Yeah. How dare you give away trade secrets like this?
I thought so too.
All Jason did was beg for Abe to come on this series of shows, and now he's here, and Jason's not nowhere to be found.
Well, what can I say? I mean, I am maybe Jason. Maybe.
So as we established last week, we went over slasher films where we nailed down the concept of a slasher film as well as our own picks that would kind of correspond to the genre. And as I said, this week we're talking monster movies. We're going to do roughly the same thing with some twists, because monster movies are a little more broad than slasher films, which is, you know, fairly established as a horror genre as far as rules and what have you. But before we get to all that, let's go over some show notes quickly, right here. As I said last week, email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com to let us know your favorites in these respective genres that we're talking about. We talked about slashers last week, as I said, so if you want to email us about, you know, your favorite slasher film there, with, you know, some reason as to why, that'd be great. And since we're talking about monster movies this week, feel free to submit your favorite monster movie with some kind of description. For all the emails that we do get, we'll put those in one of Abe's old ratty hats and choose one out and send that person a prize. So a little
get
extra...
Gonna be in my farm hat.
Little extra initiative to send us some emails. You can easily win something. That's always fun.
Yes. I'm just gonna venture this out there for all the listeners, and this is a special episode, but we'll play this on the regular one too. If you submit your name, you're probably gonna win.
Really?
Probably.
I think I'm gonna submit. Hold on, I'm gonna submit.
I don't know if guests can submit, right, Aaron?
No, but we don't allow guests to submit. But there is a good chance that you could win.
There's a high probability that if you submit your name, you're probably gonna win.
I kind of feel cheated, to be honest. I feel all right. I'm over it. I'm okay.
It's okay.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I'm okay.
In addition to our contest here, which of course you can email us again at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. I once again remind
Gmail.
Our listeners that are, you know, in the LA area, coming October 18th is the premiere of the film that Jimmy produced, The Harvesters. Which is a free screening of the film at the LA Regency Theater. So
yeah, it's gonna be fun. We're gonna have Q&A. We're gonna have prizes. We're gonna have a bit of a William Castle-esque thing going on. It's gonna be fun.
You're gonna put buzzers under all the seats.
Maybe. Yeah, we are doing something special. So
tweeting it now. Jimmy O promises buzzers under every seat.
Buzzers under, and things will come out and squirt people in the face. It'll be amazing.
In a budgetary move, Jimmy will just be hiding under one select seat.
Probably, yes. Probably. And just, you know. I'll have a taser. So
why is this grown man have his arms wrapped around my seat right now? why is he just sitting under my legs staring at me?
He's actually trying to go out for the part for Pee Wee's Playhouse as the couch.
So kind of, yeah, that's a good idea. Oh my god. Yes, come all.
I'll be there as Cowboy Curtis. Okay.
Yeah, see, you better be there, Aaron. You're going to be there, right?
Yeah, of course.
You better. No, you will. You're a good guy.
Thanks, Jimmy. I am a good guy. All right. So let's move on now, guys. Let's get right into it. Let's get into our genre for the week, which is monster movies. And so before we get to our, you know, our respective picks that we made to delve deeper into the genre, let's talk about the genre as a whole. Now, obviously, as I said, slashers are a little more, you know, it's obvious to an extent. More definitive. Yeah, that's a good way to
put it. Some of them could be considered monsters.
Yes, obviously, yes. There's a lot of bleed over in a lot of these genres for a variety of reasons. But so what, when you think of a monster movie, is there something that you, obviously, I think there's, you know, various figures that come to mind, just like in any kind of genre. But is there any kind of established idea you have around what a makes up a monster movie?
Well, I think the basic, I mean, it usually has a monster.
Yeah.
That's true.
And we'll see you guys next week.
That's it for Out Now with Aaron and Abe.
My work over it. No, but to overlap onto Jimmy's point there, yeah, it's a monster, but it's a foreign entity that appears on the screen that either kills people or, you know, basically hunts them down and does bad things at people. So that's kind of how I view a monster. It could be a human or take human form.
I think it's further from human, though. I mean, there is some sort of human.
Wait, are you saying it's more human than human?
No.
More human than human. More human. Was a Rob Zombie. White Zombie there for you.
Maybe more of a supernatural aspect. With like powers or like abilities and things, like, you know, slashers are based around whether it's a creature or something. It's still the idea of a person stalking someone with a knife. That's the basic idea. You can break those down to a creature, like a monster or whatever. I would think is a bit bigger of an idea of that. They may be able to attack, you know, just a group of people, or they may like be big enough to like tear down a city, but they're, you know, just a bigger entity with, you know, getting further away from human, while some of them would still have human capabilities. It's a little bit broader range of things, but it's where last week it was like, you know, stalking teens with a knife. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, you know, they kind of fall under those story trappings all the time. Monsters can, but there's like a bigger pool to go from.
I think
and they can be tied to mythology. Just, you know, outer space, you know.
And, you know, I think a big point in, you know, monster movies in general, there is obviously, they're an antagonistic force. They are generally trying to cause some kind of harm. But a good amount of monster movies or creature features, they feature these, you know, beings that exist a lot of times just because of circumstance. It's not, if it's with some exception, there's mostly monsters that arrive in a situation and just happen to be causing some kind of chaos, not because they were bent on doing so in the first place, but just because this is where they've arrived at and this is what's going on because of it. So because of that, a lot of monsters become empathetic. You get a lot of creatures that you have some kind of feeling for, as far as that's unfortunate. This thing still can't exist because it's causing so much harm, but I also feel bad that it's wound up in this situation to begin with. Now,
it's not its fault.
Exactly. And
Robin Williams is in the movie?
Obviously.
Oh my gosh.
Obviously, I can think to things like King Kong or Frankenstein, because, you know, there's plenty of empathy to have for those creatures. But, you know, you get away from that to something that's just more malevolent, to something like, I don't know, The Thing. You know, there's a lot of
everybody's
there's ways to, you know, there's ways to take what these movies are trying to do. I'm trying to think of other ways to define this. Where, I mean, obviously, yes, we've established a monster movie has a monster in it. Generally, that involves generally that involves, you know, not necessarily the most elaborate of special effects, but a lot of ingenuity on the part of the filmmakers. perspective is usually from the point of view of the people the monster's terrorizing in some way. I'll be curious what our picks are, but perspective from the monster's point of view is not an often occurrence. Other thoughts?
No, yeah.
Monster, I'm trying to...
That's true, actually. You don't really see... Isn't there a movie where it's told from the monster's perspective?
We can get to that, because I have some ideas on that.
Definitely. Definitely. There's a few.
Okay. I would say usually, I won't name any specific movies in case anybody picked them, but like the werewolf would be a monster that's told usually from the monster's perspective.
Absolutely.
A lot of 50-50, but, you know, there's a lot of werewolf stories that, you know, the protagonist is the werewolf.
Well, yeah, and
I think a lot of classic movies too. I think some of the earlier monster movies kind of dealt with that. You kind of felt sorry for the monster.
And like The Lost Boys is told from the perspective of someone becoming a vampire.
Yeah. Good point. Say hello to the night, Lost Boys.
Now, I guess we'll get to this in our picks or whatnot, but I tried to exclude vampires. Yeah, I tried to stay away from that because I feel like, compared to something like Frankenstein or, you know, other classic Universal monster or, you know, even Hammer Horror or just monster movies, like, it seems like there's so much vampire media out there that and there's such a kind of a distinctness, there's a distinct quality of what a vampire is doing versus what other monsters are doing that it seems like a genre unto itself. There's, you know, a level.
So you're not talking about Twilight then?
I'm not talking about. I only included New Moon.
So there goes my picks.
Yeah, I was picking all those too.
I tried to get it varied, but I kept coming around to vampires.
Yeah, Team Jacob.
is that the name of the movie?
No, that's isn't that like, I don't know who Jake.
I think
played.
Jake was he was a werewolf, right?
That's Fanny.
Oh,
way
too. Yeah, no. I'm on Team Edward.
That's,
sorry,
Abe. That's feigning way too much like fake ignorance to ask. Is that the name of a movie? Get out of here.
I've never seen the movie. Or
you damn well know there's no movie called Twilight : Team Jacob. Like, come on, get out of here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Twitter posts, right?
Yes, there are. That is true. That is absolutely true.
All right,
you get a gold star for that, for sure. You're welcome.
Multicolor star.
There is a range. There is a range of monster movies, I would say. I mean, there's a lot of it stems from kaiju cinema, where you have, you know, Japanese monster movies, essentially, where there's an emphasis on the giant nature of them. There's a key one that obviously applies to this with many sequels and what have you and spin-offs. But there
Mothra,
is
Mothra,
Mothra, yeah. But
Mothra.
But there's an emphasis on size and scale in those, and that leads to there's a disaster film motif that goes along with those kind of things. There could be a lot of associated social commentary about military and science and politics that lead to these kind of things that go along with this. This
da largely, bombs.
Yes, this again. This largely describes one main pick here. But I mean, there's,
well, a lot of times the monster movies kind of reflect the nature of society. You know, in the 50s they had the giant insects and then the communism type thing, and so it. And I think monsters have gotten a little more gruesome, you know, in the past few years, obviously.
Well, much like, you know, as we talked about this with slasher films as well, to an extent, but it applies to a lot of horror in general, where you can add in layered subtext and social commentary and a lot of other prevailing themes. And yes, obviously monster movies, which, you know, we haven't really established a timeline, but they certainly rose to greater prominence in the 50s as far as what I'm talking about with, like, giant monster movies and, like, B-movies and whatnot.
Yeah.
You can go earlier to think of, like, the mid-20s to the 40s, where you get all the, you know, classical monsters such as Frankenstein, Dracula, the Mummy, what have you. And then over time, obviously, you know, the genre evolves as far as what's popular and what have you. So you get, monster movies kind of, they never really go away, but it certainly, you know, it seems you're getting less giant insect movies in the 60s, 70s when you're focused more on, you know, grittiness or experimental ideas and what have you, until you get, you know, again, we get to the 80s where you get nonstop slasher movies and, you know, zombie movies obviously make their, you know, more prominence too, which could be arguably considered monster movies. But again, there's so many that it feels like a genre into itself, which is why it's going to be one of our genres that we talk about
in
a couple of weeks.
I mean, yeah, with zombies though, I mean, we had it not been for like the last like 10 years of resurgence in them, they might have been able to just throw in with this monster genre.
Yeah,
because they had a run in the late 70s to mid 80s, and you know, and it was like a big, you know, they were like a big deal, and then they disappeared largely. I remember being like, you know, I don't want to say it for like, you know, I'll save it for a zombie discussion, but like when like something like Return of the Living Dead 3 came out, I had to like grasp onto it because I'm like, oh my gosh, a zombie movie. Holy crap. Mm-hmm. And that was a straight to video cheapie.
That's a good movie though. That movie was underrated, man.
Yeah, I have a soft spot for it.
It's good stuff.
Different. It's really different, but I mean, we'll get into that another time. But like that's with the zombies, I think, you know, until recently, we could have probably included them in this episode.
I agree with that.
I see what you're saying for sure, and that, I mean, obviously, you know, we talked about this last week, even with slasher films, where they, you know, kind of died and then came back again to a point, and now they're currently kind of dormant right now, as far as, you know.
Get it? They rose from the dead.
Monster movies, it's, you know, because the genre, it's so, or the subgenre, it's so broad, you know, it kind of comes and goes, but you can look at, which we can get to, you can look at a lot of high concept movies that essentially are monster movies, or even looking at things that, you know, aren't necessarily horror and consider them monster movies, where you look at something like, I don't know, a lot of movies of dragons that, you know, are all kinds of things, sure, but not necessarily horror, but they still involve some kind of monster of sorts, but then it comes down to defining what a monster is again.
Right. I mean, you talked about The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing, but I mean, I guess you throw that with monster movie, but what does that monster exactly look like? You know, like a monster, I would think, you know, you'd have some sort of definition with it. And same with like an Invasion of the Body Snatchers, I guess you could throw some monster stuff in there, but it's like, you know, with the monsters, like that's what this monster is. And then there's no, I think that may be the thing about The Thing is that the monster has no definition, but
yeah, that's what makes it unique into itself, I guess.
Yeah.
And there's so much to explore with that. And I have a feeling it's going to come up again as we keep going with this.
We might. Someone may actually think of The Thing. It would be weird, but someone may.
Any other thoughts on just the... Well, here, okay, here's a question then. What makes an effective monster?
That's a good question.
I think design... a design that like you'd, you know, want on like a shirt. I think that's a big, it sounds silly then, so surface level, but like a really cool design and look of a monster is important. I mean, like that came, like the Bride of Frankenstein was in 4 minutes of that movie, never came back for any other monster movie. And she's been iconic as hell. Like she came, hissed a couple times and like was dead in like a couple seconds. And look how long she's lasted. I mean, everybody.
Spoiler alert! My God, jeez.
I mean, like 1950. Yeah.
Brandon, that's obviously.
Dude, it was like the 30s.
Yeah, it's like 32, 31.
Yeah,
some time traveler from the 30s has come now, and he's like, "Oh, so well, now with Aaron and Abe, bonus episode."
35.
They made a sequel to Frankenstein. You don't say.
That's what they sound like.
But yeah, Brandon, that's a fantastic point, because The Bride of Frankenstein is completely iconic and, yes, has almost no presence in cinema history beyond one movie.
Yeah.
But it's been endlessly...
And she was hot.
And Pete could be easily kind of recognizable just by seeing the hair alone. So yeah, obviously a creative design is a huge factor in that. I suppose, you know, having a lasting effect through scariness is something...
I mean, mm-hmm. We know, unlike other genres, we know the Stan Winstons, the Tom Savini. It's like all these guys, the Howard Burgers, the people who make these because we like their designs. We, you know, those guys are rock stars. And other genres, I think, you know, CGI takes a tremendous amount of like talent and a lot of work. But can you name me a lot of those artists? Thank you. but I mean, these guys who grew up, you get the Fangoria magazines, and these guys, they were telling you about their secrets about making them, and then people have wanted to make the cost, like the horror like convention stuff. People, these were the ones that were, people were making their own outfits and masks to start with, and like, not that I'm not saying it's like the starting point of fandom, but no. You know, it was all based on just because of these designs, and usually, you know, memories of being scared of them to go with it.
Yeah Dennis. I also think it helps to have good human characters involved. I mean, not I like a lot of monster movies that have shitty, you know, really shitty human characters. But sometimes, you know, obviously when you have something with really strong, a really strong protagonist, it's obviously the monsters are far more scary because you actually care.
Right, yeah. I agree. So if except they're involved in some good suspenseful sequences or maybe some really cool kills or attacks or something, like that, that helps as well.
Which doesn't explain one of my picks, but that's all right.
It's a good segue.
Well, yeah, why don't we get there? Why don't we get to our picks then for, you know.
Let's do it.
So as we did last week, I want to establish what we were going for between all of us for when we, you know, formed this kind of list, where again, these aren't necessarily our favorite monster movies, or even just the ideal examples of them, unless some of you, you know, did go that route, but it should just be a matter of movies you wanted to speak up for this segment. So let's go the same order as last week. So let's start with Brandon then. Brandon, what was your, how did you handle forming your list?
Randomly? Yeah. I was thinking about going like by decades, but I really couldn't string together. You know, I kind of wanted the creatures to be different entities from different eras. But so were the underappreciated. My first one's probably like the most well-known movie of them all. It's like an all-time classic. But I have a Creature from the Black Lagoon. He's like
I've
the last.
I've never heard of that.
All right. Well. We'll take a break. Have Jimmy watch it and come back.
All right, hold on. Let's all go. Okay, and we're back. Wow, that was
wow.
That was
so good.
Wow, that was really good.
Jimmy, okay. You are so informed now.
Hold on.
Okay. That's just like that musical they had at Universal.
Abe, what's your pick? Okay. Anyways, no, this movie it's a beautiful looking film. He wound up getting, you know, the Gilman got two sequels, but the film inspired like stuff like Jaws, and I think a lot of the slasher motifs come from the creature. There's a lot of POV shots, music stings, and the general vibe you get from him. But he's kind of an untapped resource from the Universal Monsters. Like all of those guys came back in some form, and you don't really see the creature come back until the Monster Squad. In the late 80s in some form. But he's kind of an untapped resource. He's iconic. He's just an eerie kind of what is it kind of presence. But I think just for sheer like inspiration, shot composition, stuff they've done with him, I think he's one of the best monsters. But he's also someone that wasn't like overdone with us and one that you kind of wanted more from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it feels like there's only so much you can do with Gilman, which is a weird thing to say since horror thrives on being able to make more of it.
The sequel, Revenge of the Creature, is basically your blueprint for, you know, Jaws 3D and Jurassic World still going on, where that, you know, they bring him to a theme park, and it's an early role for Clint Eastwood in that movie as well.
I haven't seen The Creature Walks Among Us. Is that where he gets a job and like has a regular life?
Yes. They lose a lot of money and they have to like cut his like change like his outfit for some reason. It looks they start to like mix it. They start mixing like DNA and stuff with him and making him more human. But it's just because the outfit needs to look cheaper, I think.
Then I'll just not see the creature walks among us and just assume that it's like him going to like a day-to-day job. He has like a collar.
That's probably better. You miss out on I can't forget the actor's name, but he's also in This Island Earth, one of those old 50s guys with that like the heroic voice for everybody.
Uh-huh. That's pretty good, by the way.
Creature from the Black Lagoon, that's a good pick. That is. And yeah, that is another iconic design that, yeah, like you're saying, there's not that much of it as far as like seeing it around, but you can still very much identify it.
I mean, I think that cost still, for the most part, works today. I mean, especially when he's underwater. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of...
The underwater scenes in that are fantastic.
Amazing, yeah. And the movie was shot back then, and I like a lot of the boat stuff. There's it's an entry point for a lot of different movies that come off of it. And he's from the atomic era, but he's like one of the more smaller scale monsters of the Atomic Era. And he's like the cap, the bookend to the Universal classic monsters, even though he shows up after like 5 or 6 years after all the mashups and Abbott and Costello movies were going on.
Has anyone been, because we know Universal is trying to, you know, make their cinematic shared monster universe. Is there anything about Creature of the Black Lagoon in that? Did they talk about that?
He's in there. John
Carpenter. Yeah, I thought he was there.
Who's rumored?
John Carpenter tried to remake it in the 90s, and they gave him Village of the Damned instead.
And it all worked out. So.
Yeah. When the Village of the Damned Blu-ray came out and he was talking about that on there, I was like, oh, man. Now I want to see this 1990s John Carpenter Creature from the Black Lagoon movie, and I never will.
Done effectively, there is a way to, because I can see the suit being portrayed as, you know, kind of silly, because, you know, you look at it from just still shots or whatnot and not really realize what the dread is of something like that. It could seem kind of silly, but I think if you handle it, you know, if John Carpenter made basically like The Fog, replaced ghost pirates with the creature, that's a pretty effective movie.
you can make him for one-time movie, and then you put him away for a few years, and I don't know if he screams a series, even though they made three of them back then. They're rather, you know, repetitive, but yeah, that's horror, too.
Yeah.
Abe, how did you go about making your list?
Again, I tried to think of movies that you guys probably wouldn't think of, because you guys are experts in this field. And I also tried to find some things that were somewhat humorous, so one of my first picks is Eight-Legged Freaks.
You're going to run out of movies when we get to horror comedies.
Well, no, I've got some up my sleeve, hopefully.
All right. You wear short sleeves, though. Okay, go on.
I do wear short sleeves a lot of the day. But Eight-Legged Freaks is it's this terrible CG giant spiders because they were contaminated due to some nuclear experiments in the desert and some town, and David Arquette happens to come back through, and all of a sudden these giant spiders start attacking everybody from old barbers to motocross guys to a giant mole. So for the most part, there's actually a lot of laughs in it. It's not really very suspenseful or horrific. I think, like, even Arachnophobia, which is somewhat labeled as humorous,
it's a horror comedy.
It's more silly than Arachnophobia. So for the most part, I do have a fear of spiders, not giant ones, but just spiders in general.
And I own a tarantula.
So if a giant spider came up to you, just be like, "Oh, hey, giant spider! I'm not afraid of you. How are you doing?"
Yeah, that Shalob thing, I'm just totally
I'm
happy.
Abe. What's your name?
We'd do a podcast together. I would just stare into its eight eyes and just hope that I'm not eaten. But Eight-Legged Freaks is definitely something where I think people would probably enjoy seeing it if they sat down and watched it on a Halloween night.
It's a fun movie. I like that movie. And don't forget Scarlett Johansson, man.
And one of the few theatrical features for Kari Wuer.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great video queen. Yeah.
Yeah, it is early Scarlett Johansson.
Damn right it is.
I remember I was excited for Eight-Legged Freaks when it was coming out and was disappointed in it. And I'm not like a huge fan of it, like, because I thought it was going to be basically more fun. And it wasn't as fun as I wanted it to be.
I had that same reaction too, but I liked it more on video.
See,
I saw it in the theaters.
That's where I saw it.
That lessens the expectation right there.
Exactly.
It's on HBO like all the time for some reason too. So it is like I generally like see it coming. It's like, really, this is on now. Like of all the movies in your library,
it's on the watch,
like constantly on. But I haven't revisited it off. I've seen like bits and pieces here or there because I'm like, hey, there's Dougie Doug running away from spiders.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's actually worth it. It's a fun movie if you like want to just chill and watch something stupid. And look, there's nothing wrong with that. It's fun to do that.
Given that it's not on my list, but because we're talking about Alien Freaks, I do want to point out that Big Ass Spider is a solid movie with Greg.
Oh,
Gruber,
that is a fun one.
That's good too.
That one out.
With Greg Grunberg, that movie's a lot of fun. I'm a big as far as the
giant spider movies.
As far as giant spider, especially recent giant spider movies go,
that was pretty good.
It's very entertaining. So yeah, Jimmy, how'd you go about forming your list?
Well, it was really weird because I wanted to kind of get an interesting batch, and I was you know, I was looking at a couple of very popular ones. I was like, no, I don't want to go that route. There is a couple more. There is one very popular one, at least in the 80s. There's one that's just dumb and stupid, but I love it. And there's one that's actually, very few people have heard of. So should I start with really dumb or no one's heard of or really great?
You can talk about the Harvesters, yeah.
Well, the Harvesters are great, obviously. Should I start with dumb?
Yep.
Okay. You know, when Jaws was attacking people in the ocean, they thought, yeah, we can go back to the beach and we'll be safe. No way, because it's Blood Beach, baby.
Blood Beach with Johnson.
Oh, so yeah. Amazing. I love this. I mean, where else can you get people being pulled under sand, a would-be rapist being castrated? This is a movie, man. And it has Burt Young. It has John Saxon. It's people getting sucked under the beach by some... I always thought when I was a kid, I thought it was a giant crab, but I don't really know what the monster is, but it's a big thing under the... What is it? I mean,
they just can't stop going. The movie has a great poster, too. It's just like a
woman
in a bikini, like, getting sucked into the sand.
Yes, on a hot summer's day with there's people there, and she's got her arms open. She's like, help me, I'm being sucked.
Yeah, it's just people.
So, I love this movie. I love this movie. It's directed by Jeffrey Bloom, who also wrote the screenplay, and it was story credit. He did Flowers in the Attic. He did Thing of Nightmares. So the guy, I mean, I think he wrote, he directed Flowers in the Attic. So, I mean, he's done a couple things, kind of, maybe. But I love this movie. It's fun. It's ridiculously cheesy, but I think it's definitely a B-movie classic.
All right.
Cool. Now, so there you go.
My list, I tried to... I mixed in some favorites with movies I really enjoy that I think just provide a broad spectrum of what I think of with monster movies as far as the different kinds of things you can get out of something like this. And so my first one is one of the great movies ever, which is King Kong. I've gone on the record in saying that I, in addition to the 1933 King Kong, 2005's Peter Jackson's King Kong, I adore that movie. It is one of my favorite movies. I like it more than all those Lord of the Rings movies. I think it is a fantastic remake. But I will talk about the 1933 version from Marion's.
Which at one time had giant spiders.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
Yes, it did. But yeah, the...
Wait, you're not talking about the one with Jeff Bridges and Jessica Lange?
Not a big fan. As good as that cast actually is, I'm not a big fan of the 70s.
The cast is great. Jessica Lange was hot. Love that movie.
It's a slog to get through that one. I say that knowing that, you know, there's 3 hours and change on the Peter Jackson movie, but I can watch that. I've watched that all the time. But that 70s movie is... It takes its time. Regardless, the Marion Z. Cooper film, it is such a great like example of what monster cinema is, what it's become, and great special effects, and you know the kind of classical style of acting all merged into this really strong feature that
mm-hmm.
I think has glued well together by Max Steiner's great score for that film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember mm-hmm. When Jackson's Kong was coming out, they released a brand new DVD at that time for the film that, you know, it had like a great new, you know, transfer for DVD. And that
like a tin, right?
Yeah, it was like a cool mm-hmm. tin. And I've since got the Blu-ray, which just looks even better. And this movie looks so fantastic. And what's, in addition to just having this, you know, a fun adventure story, essentially, about a group of people going to a random island and discovering all kinds of things, not just Kong, but, you know, dinosaurs. There's such a
I think that's the thing that people forget about that movie.
Yeah, that
like
it has
the
great
opening adventure. Yeah, it's like a jungle adventure movie.
It has giant dinosaur fights in there. Yeah. Like, it's awesome.
And at one point, some guy's getting his head eaten by, like, a giant worm or something like that, right?
No, that's 2005.
It's 2005. Oh,
but,
my bad.
The in addition to, you know, having this grand adventure, just the visual effects work is so like is so fascinating, and that's what I love about the home release, where it has these great documentaries that go into all the layering that was made for the backgrounds to work and everything, and the stop motion effects, which are just terrific to watch, just to see the kind of effort that goes into it, where, you know, we talked about Kubo and the Two Strings and how much we love Laika all the time.
Yeah.
And part of what I miss, though, that they don't, you know, really have in there is the kind of, when you see King Kong, you see all the little hairs move and whatnot because of, you know, the stop motion animation. And the Laika films, as good as they are, they smooth all that out, so you don't really see the grittiness of what that kind of animation process involves.
And there's a charm, yeah.
Yeah, there's that adds charm to it. And I miss it. It, you know, it's the kind of thing that makes people forget the amount of effort that goes into those movies when you take that stuff out, I think. And
wait, so you're saying you hate Laika? Okay, I just want to make sure.
No.
That is slander, my friend.
Yes, it really is.
It's an element.
I had to go there.
It's an element that I almost wish there's like a separate video track when that movie comes out on Blu-ray, where I can watch that has the kind of the grittiness of that added back in.
It's like all those Rankin Bass holiday movies, like that sort of charm, where you're just like, oh, these aren't, you know, maybe they're not that great, but man, it's that charm of watching that animation.
But you watch King Kong, and there's an amazing amount of personality in that movie where you see mm-hmm. you see Kong's various animations. That's so much noise.
Sorry.
there's that big fight between King Kong and the Tyrannosaurus, or whatever they call it in the Kong universe. But it's not just that King Kong, you know, wins. It's that he picks up the jaw and, like, moves it, he plays with it, and then throws the head down on the ground, which is something they retained in the 2005 version when he, like, after he beats down the Tyrannosaurus, he picks up the jaw and plays with it. It's like, oh, I did this, and then, like, throws it on the ground again. It's like, that doesn't need to be there, but there's this weird, like, these little idiosyncrasies that really add to how effective this monster is. And monster...
Also, when you have Jackson, that's someone who is a fan, and he gets it, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to put that in.
And so, you know, I say monster loosely because obviously Kong, it's what I was talking about earlier, where it's a creature of circumstance, where it gets taken down at the end because he's brought there by people, and, you know, he has this affinity for Fay Wray. But, you know, it's just a random gorilla. Like, it doesn't know any better for what it's doing. It's just trying to protect itself. And so you feel legit bad when it's like these planes are just shooting this thing because it doesn't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, you know, it's a mix of great adventure, some level of horror, since there is, you know, there is some, I imagine in 33 for sure, there's some shocking stuff that takes place. And just like a really, you know, sympathetic, you know, creature at the center of all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the, I mean, yeah, it's horror. It gets that weird area where people like are like, well, don't think Jaws is horror, don't think Jurassic Park's horror. I'm like, it's in that wheelhouse. It counts just because it's a legendary big movie. Doesn't, you know, mean it's not horror or anything like that. But I think one of the best things for people to be surprised when they go back to King Kong and the original Godzilla is actually how competent, good, and like serious these movies actually work.
Oh, yeah.
Still to this day.
Yeah.
And because there's no, you know, it's that year that these came out before basically the time of Snark. So there's no, like, you can't wink into the camera when you don't know what the hell that means. So yes, it's completely, it's played completely straight because there's no other way to do it. There's a bit of knowing in the actors to a point where you have Robert Armstrong, Robert Armstrong for sure. Like, as Carl Denham, where there's a kind of like a, we're going on an adventure. There's a kind of like an up attitude about everything, but it's not it's not like Cabin in the Woods or something, which like, you know, is in on the mm-hmm. joke. It's more of it
super meta.
Yeah, it's playing up to like to what a B movie is, even though there's not, you know, there isn't really a B movie at that time. It's more of just like some movies have budgets and some, you know, have lesser budgets. But King Kong had a big budget for what it was doing and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, I love King Kong. It's one of my favorite movies. Yeah, it's a fantastic film.
Great movie.
It's
great movie. A big inspiration for Peter Jackson too, obviously.
Yes.
Besides the fact he remade it, but you know, almost every interview he talks about that being, you know, his first big introduction to movies. So there's a reason for it. It's a great film.
Brandon, what's your next film?
The next film on my list is I'm gonna consider these monsters because I mean I don't really think they fall under zombies or anything else, but I'm going with 80s classic Night of the Demons.
Oh, okay.
Woot! Good one.
It's a super fun movie, which is actually, it's pretty scary. It's pretty fun. It's pretty gruesome. Got some great makeup, but it's about, you know, a bunch of teens, college kids that go to this haunted house to party on Halloween, and they end up, you know, awakening this demonic force that starts taking them over one by one and just, you know, trying to take over and come out to the world and kill each other. And it's got some, you know, great effects, and it's got a memorable Linnea Quigley performance. And it's got a cool soundtrack, got a really cool opening credit sequence, just a fun haunted house slash monster, you know, mash.
Is there a Blu-ray for that yet?
Yeah, it's Scream Factory.
Did you review it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did. And Linnea Quigley liked it and shared it. I was like, awesome.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a really cool movie. I remember back in the day when I was a kid, I rented it on a whim, just the box, and I ended up, it's one of a movie I go back to a lot. And it's got, what's his name, did the effects for it? Steve Johnson, who is, for some reason, the real-life Tony Stark. Okay. If you've ever seen him, he's got the he talks like Robert Downey Jr. and has the facial hair. Yeah. So I wonder if Robert Downey Jr. based his Tony Stark somewhat off Steve Johnson. But if you ever see any bonus features with him, you'll be like, oh my gosh.
I'm surprised this slipped through the cracks. I feel like I would have had Night of the Demons if I knew it was on Blu-ray. How did I miss this one? But okay.
Night of the Demons and Night of the Demons 2 are both on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
And the remake with Eddie Furlong and Shannon Elizabeth.
So, which is obviously great.
Which is not the one I picked.
All right. Abe, what's your next pick?
Next pick is Gremlins.
Yeah,
and it's a Christmas classic to some degree, but it actually gets pretty dark when the new Gremlin guys start coming out. So
when the Gremlins come out,
so are we doing the comedy episode for Abe segments this week?
Well, to be fair though, the first Gremlins is a lot darker. The second is a little more. Yeah, I mean, it's a little dark.
The second one is just like goofy with, like, you know, shadow puppets on the screen with Abraham Lincoln and whatever
else.
The
second one is awesome. I'm putting that right out there right now. So we stop talking.
No, the first one actually gets pretty dark when one of the teachers gets stabbed in the butt with like a needle. He's dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's thrown out the window. I think the first one though, like for me, it was like one of the, like when I saw it, I was very, very young and like scared me a bunch. And then when I went back to it as an adult, I was like, oh, this is actually kind of funny.
It's actually kind of funny. And we bring it up on the show, the regular show, a lot of just me when I name segments of movies that really take me out of it because something weird is some exposition that is weird is taking place because what's her face?
Because you want to, for some reason, name check Phoebe Cates' monologue that's supposed to be funny. Like it's
such a weird time, and it's so sad because her monologue is about her dad dying in the chimney. In any case, these little gremlins, they're these like 2 foot tall creatures that decide to go and wreak havoc on this little town because this little cute Mogwai, Gizmo, is the
so adorable.
He's super adorable, but they don't follow the rules, and because you don't follow the rules, these gremlins wreak havoc and chaos ensues until they can finally figure out what to do to capture all this guy.
Someday we'll do an expansive podcast that examines the rules of Gremlins, which make absolutely no sense. But,
I think they know that, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
How ridiculous those three rules are.
But it'd still be fun to really go into those rules of Gremlins.
And the second one's kind of like, yeah, we knew this the whole time, folks. Part of the thing.
But Gremlins is creepy, and I've seen this movie a lot over the years, but I did see it a lot when I was young. It was one of the movies I had like VHS taped, and it has some key sequences that really freak you out. And one for me is always when the gremlin kills the film professor, for one thing, where he's trying to he tries to feed it candy, sticks his hand in the cage, and doesn't get that hand back.
When he's scissoring, when he's like clipping open the cage, it's always like just like a creepy.
Yeah, there's a, like Joe. It's Joe Dante, the director.
Joe Dante.
It's Joe Dante, but it's one of those It's one of those Spielberg-produced films that look almost like Spielberg directed it, but they have that touch of the director. Like, it's very, like, looks like Poltergeist. It looks like any of those ones. Well,
especially all the establishing shots in the beginning.
Like Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, any of those movies.
It's Amblin, so yes, it has the kind of sheen of all that. And it's Joe Dante and Chris Columbus wrote it, so it's like these are the guys from the Spielberg school. Like,
the camera moves, you can tell it's Dante. But when it's like still, it's like, oh, did Steven Spielberg make this? Yeah.
But there's some great like shots of when they're chasing like Stripe and he jumps in the pool and the entire pool just starts bubbling.
It starts bubbling.
And
yeah.
Like then the next shot is you see and it's all stop motion, but you see like Spike emerge from like a horizon and then you see just an army of gremlins come over the horizon. It's like, oh my gosh, like this is gonna be terrible. And then things happen.
Stripe at the fountain at the end with his finger in it holding the gun, being like, Gizmo. It's like, oh my gosh.
Or even when he jumps out when he's just a skeleton. It's like, this thing does not stop. It's crazy.
No, it doesn't. It's like a Terminator.
But the movie has got a great score, too.
Oh, yeah, Jerry Goldsmith's music.
I don't think anyone ever
Gremlins.
Talks about the Gremlins score, but that's in your head. It's just – it's great.
It sounds like Gremlins are singing it to you. Like, that's the – there's, like, the especially, you know, the
yes,
main –
Yes,
the main,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
the main theme that I'm referring to, yes. It sounds like Gremlins are actually singing that theme. Like, that's the kind of imprint that I get when I think of it.
You got a memorable Dick Miller performance.
Every Dick Miller is a memorable Dick Miller performance.
WWII. No, right. I recently, funny enough, my son, he's like into like horror stuff or whatever, and he gets the
How
little.
How come?
Weird. I would never thought that.
I would never have guessed that, Brandon.
He gets the little like Funko Pop mini mystery mini stuff, and he got Stripe in one, and he wanted to know all about what Gremlins was. And I was like, and there's a weekend where my wife was gone. It was just me and my 4-year-old and my 2-year-old. And he wanted to see it. I'm like, well, I'm either going to be a horrible father or they're going to like this. So I showed them Gremlins and I bit my tongue and they loved it so much. We watched Gremlins 2 the very next night.
The new batch.
So luckily, did not freak them out and they thought it was great. So holds up for kids.
Oh, and probably the douchiest Judge Reinhold performance in all of film.
Oh, hey, we're talking Cable.
Damn right.
You know, not nice guy Judge Reinhold is just a complete jerk in this movie.
He's, you know, it's great. It kind of scene with his, like, fate in that movie.
Which
like
is
him in a, yeah. Like in the vault, yeah.
Yeah. All right, it's enough Gremlins talk. Jimmy, what's your next pick?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm going to go a little more serious, and I think this is probably one of the best examples of a modern-day horror film, even though the ending pisses me off. 2007, The Mist.
That's what it's on my list.
Yeah, dude, this is a fantastic film, and I think even, you know, again, 2007, I think this holds up really well.
Oh, yeah.
The devise of it. Yeah. Oh my God. The black and white is beautiful.
Well, the effects were never visualized for color, and that's why they look weird in the theatrical version.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is a really beautiful film. It's a smart film. The only issue I had with the ending, because I don't obviously, well, spoilers, because, you know, I called spoilers for Bride of Frankenstein. It pissed me off, because no father would do that quick, ever. Ever. Brandon, I think you'd probably agree with me on that. It would have to be freaking, everything would be going to complete hell for me to do what he did. But with that said, excuse me?
I think that's the point that we were trying to emphasize. I mean, you're in a film where, I mean, they only have a certain amount of time to tell their story and to get that point across.
Well, there is like noise they're hearing, which is why they go the route they do.
Yeah, but it's like, again, dude, I would have to be, they don't see anything. It's just noise. Just noise, and the way the way they stretch out, it's like, oh, we're out of gas. Let's just gotta do what we gotta do. But with that said, though, I still think it was a ballsy ending, and I respected the hell out of it. And I loved Thomas Jane, but Marcia Gay Harden, man, oh my God, One of the best horror. Did she get an Oscar nomination? I don't think she did. She should have.
No.
She should have.
It's certainly.
She is phenomenal.
On a list of characters to hate in film, she easily makes it onto my top 10 list frequently.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. And the monsters, you know, talk about the monsters, they are genuinely scary.
Well,
yeah,
what I like about that is it's a dimensional thing. They're coming from another dimension, and the movie doesn't try or set up like a set of rules that they have, because you wouldn't know if it was another dimension from another dimension. Like you don't know. Like we only know earthly bounds and our universe's like limits. From another dimension, that's a whole nother thing. And I like that the movie doesn't even try to like. You know,
it gives very
try to
like
set
we,
rules. It's
we,
so vague, yeah. It makes it creepier. Yeah. It's like when they're driving around and that giant foot comes out, it's like, what the hell is this stuff? Mm-hmm. It makes it like it makes it even crazier and scarier to me. It was like really haunting when they were out driving around and you just don't like anything could happen.
Well, it's haunting. Like every monster is the deadliest monster ever. Like every single one of them is like awful. The bugs are awful. The tentacles are awful. The giant thing. I don't even want to know what the giant thing would do to you. Like every single thing is incredibly lethal. Like there's just like if you come in contact with this thing, there's you're dead. Like there's no winning the situation. And they killed the Shermanator right away because of this. Like it's
crazy.
Right.
Shermanator.
And here's the thing, too, as I brought up earlier, talk about what a wonderful character you have with Thomas Jane and his son. I was so on board with those two, and I was with them 100% because great performances, great script. This is a great film, and I think it's I dare say it's probably underrated. I know it didn't do as well.
It bombed
theatrically.
It bombed.
It did. It bombed, and I was shocked by that because it's a great movie.
It was a Thanksgiving release on a loaded Thanksgiving weekend.
It was a movie that was not going to do well no matter what. But it's coming from Frank Darabont, obviously, you know, who's coming off of Green Mile, and he's coming off of The Majestic, if we want to be specific here. But he's coming off, he had Green Mile and Shawshank, which are both Stephen King novels, and Stephen King wrote this novella, and Darabont changed the ending actually. Like I was at a screening of it a few years back at was it like Hero? What is it in L.A.? Do you know this, Jimmy? Hero Fest or L.A.? It's like the L.A. Times thing.
I know what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, there's.
I don't remember the name.
Well, Darabont was there, and he was talking about how like Stephen King applauded him for going a different route with the ending. Like I think it really. I mean, it's what I can what I take in about it is that it. It very much has like 50s horror in mind, like it really, or even like Night of the Living Dead, which is you know, late 60s, but like it has a kind of attitude about itself, which blends so well with the cast, where you have Thomas Jane as like you know the ostensible protagonist who you know you want to believe in, you have Andre Brower as like the doubting sub person, and they have a history between them. You have Marcia Gay Harden as just like an antagonist. There's so many characters here that make up so much drama without the part of the monsters, but then you also have this great monster movie on top of it, and it's just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. It is a really wonderful film. It's almost 10 years old. For people that are new to horrors, I highly recommend this movie. I think it's a really great film, and I want to watch it. Now I want to watch it in black and white, like right now. I'm gonna go. I gotta go. Sorry.
My next film is another classic that I've already hinted at a lot. It's Godzilla, the 1954 Godzilla. When the 2014 film came out, which as you may recall, I'm a big fan of, I was going over a lot of the other Godzilla films and I realized I'm a bigger Godzilla fan than I realized as far as the amount of these movies that I've seen, and for various reasons because. A lot of them are different than what the original Godzilla film was trying to do. But that original film, like we mentioned with King Kong, like you brought up, Brandon, it's straightforward and serious. And it very much presents a horrible situation that's made out of kind of this post-nuclear bomb Japanese fear of what's to come next. And it manifests itself as Godzilla, this towering creature that destroys cities, has atomic breath, can't be stopped, and all these other things until they, you know, find a solution. And it is another, you know, it's, you know, the creature design is unique. It's somewhat goofy for, you know, just because that's how, you know, that's how it looks nowadays when you look at Godzilla. But it's entirely effective if you actually sit down and watch that movie and feel the, you know, the tone that they're going for. And I'm speaking of course of the true Japanese version, not the Americanized version with Raymond Burr. There's
also known as the best version.
Yeah. there's a lot to really admire in what this film's trying to accomplish, and it's one where I was really happy when that Criterion version came out of it, because you get there's some great docs on it, there's a great commentary track on there, and it has a really cool box, but it's also just great to really just to be able to sit down and watch this movie and separate it from all the other ones that have, you know, a varying degrees of monsters and whatnot that just make it kind of corny fun, with some every now and then incorporating some kind of socio-political commentary in there. But this one, it hits the themes it's going for very well and provides just a really solid monster movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fun fact, by the way, this movie and Seven Samurai came out the same year and basically nearly bankrupted Toho production company.
Wow.
It's funny, like, you know, we talk about the effects and stuff, but I mean, like, people, like, part of the reason it stands the test of time today is because people were enamored with the effects back then. Like, that was like, they didn't see, like, oh, that's a model or that's that. They just hadn't seen stuff like that, and it was, you know, it worked for them on the screen. But we could go today and see the same, like, you know, 35 millimeter print of it, and we're like, oh yeah, it's kind of obvious. But to people back then, it was like the real deal.
Brandon, what's your next pick?
My next pick? You don't like my Godzilla thoughts?
Jeez. I do like your Godzilla thoughts.
We
gotta keep this going.
All right. I got a movie that I'm kind of in the middle on. I'm not, but it's something that came from the 90s. Species.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I kind of love that movie.
Yeah, it's just kind of, there was, I feel like at the time it came out, there was like nothing like it, or hadn't been in a while. And it sort of brought this hybrid of like a human and, you know, creature feature. And it kind of had a really fun cast, kind of doesn't take itself seriously. Its effects do not hold up very well.
No, they do not.
But it's sort of like, I feel like it was, it's like kind of like a surprise. I think it was a hit movie.
It was a hit enough to make a couple sequels.
It made money, yeah.
They made sequels.
You got Species 2 a couple years later, so.
Yeah, it gave us Sill, and it was just kind of an interesting movie that, like, just felt like at the time it was like a breath of fresh air that hadn't been done in a while. And tonight, it's a neat little movie that, you know, it's unoriginal, but it'd been enough time that it was, you know, held on its own kind of thing.
You got a new
And I think that the creature design's pretty notable.
Yeah, the H.R. Giger creature design. It's, you know, that's a very unique style. So when he creates new ones that make its way into big movie, or, you know, reasonably big movies, it certainly stands out. So it's like, oh, there's another Giger design, which, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you get Ben Kingsley, Michael Madsen, Mark Hellenberger, Forest Whitaker, Alfred Molina. Yeah.
Hey, don't forget Natasha Henstridge, man.
And Natasha Henstridge introduced us all to Natasha Henstridge.
All naked in that one.
Oh, yeah. So that was just kind of a fun movie. It brought some sexual flair into that kind of movie.
That's so much of Jimmy doing things in the background.
What? That's not me. I don't know what you're talking about. Sorry.
He's trying to cook an egg.
Yeah, I am. I like eggs.
Abe, what's your next pick?
I'm done.
Next movie is Coraline. I thought that you were going to steal my guess there earlier on there, Aaron, with your like and stuff, but it was a good little tease, I suppose. But Coraline is this stop-motion movie from Laika, where there's this other mother, and you don't really get a sense of what she looks like till the end, and she's just this giant metal evil bitch, and for the most part is very is very innovative in the way that it took apart this other world and how you could get to it and what you can do in the other world. Based off of a book, but I still consider her to be a monster, not in terms of like, oh wow, well she's my mom and she's a monster. More of just like, no, she's this unknown force that takes the form of other people, very similar to the Thing, and she actually kills children. So she steals their eyeballs, and also keeps you in this alternate universe. But Coraline, mm-hmm. Definitely one that I've always enjoyed. I think it's on HBO Go, I don't know. Big fan of Laika in general as well.
I agree with that. That's a good unique pick that I didn't think of. Yeah, Coraline would be a monster movie. I mean, you have a whole world.
Technically.
Yeah. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
Love the Laika. Everything they've done. Am I next?
Yeah.
Are we? Oh, wow. That was quick. I was ready for more Laika talk. You know, this one I think could have easily been in last week's, but I'm going to put it here because it technically is a monster. The Funhouse, Toby Hooper.
Oh, okay.
He is a monster. I remember.
A monster now, dressed as the monster.
Yeah, literally dressed as a monster. And I don't know if you remember, and it's hard to find, but the original poster for this movie was one of the most disturbing images I've ever seen.
It's
it's brilliant, brilliant. But I love this movie for a lot of reasons. I love that it is a blatant, it's Toby Hooper doing kind of his take on Halloween. With Elizabeth Barrage in the lead, some really interesting performances from Sylvia Miles shows up, Kevin Conway, and look, there's nothing scarier than going into one of those creepy, like, carnivals or fairs, and, you know, you have those people that look like they probably just escaped from prison. It is a legit scary movie, and they do a couple things in this film that, yes, it's technically a slasher, but again, it is a monster, and I like that how they kind of off the teens. It's pretty clever, and there's one murder that I didn't see coming when I saw it, and it still kind of gives me the. It's kind of sad. It's a sad kill.
Which one are you thinking
of? I think someone is killed accidentally.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to say because it's such a shocker.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
But it's one of my favorites. It's one I watch every year for Halloween. I think it's a pretty classy horror film, and he's scary as hell, but he's also likable. You actually feel sympathy for the monster because of how he's treated. I love this film.
It's got a good setting. Trapped in the fun house, and like that adds to a lot of stuff that you can just like have in the background to have fun with, and it's got some really cool lighting to it. Kind of for a slasher, it's pretty unpredictable, and it's got like a crazy looking killer, and it's a fun movie. I think it's underrated because I think there's a lot of people that didn't like it, but I think they should maybe go back, check it out, and see what you can appreciate from it.
There's a lot of good, like,
yeah,
I look at Toby Hooper, and, you know, you think Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but there's a lot of like good random ones that he has, and the Funhouse is certainly
Toby Hooper
one of them.
From Texas Chainsaw to like Spontaneous Combustion actually has a pretty rock solid like horror career
Life
up there
Force,
with like you
Bears,
know
stars.
Up there with like Wes Craven and stuff, and I mean he's got the Salem's Lot miniseries. He's got a lot of like good stuff, and you can people will always dog about like whether he directed Poltergeist or not. I think he's got enough on his plate to show maybe he probably did a lot on Poltergeist.
I don't know why
he probably did a lot more.
Well, it's like that's like saying Joe Dante didn't direct Gremlins. I mean, it's like they have an Amblin stamp on them. It doesn't like it. And yes,
I mean,
Spielberg
was on the set. He was probably very controlling.
He liked to hang out. Like he wanted to see. I mean, it was his baby, essentially, and Toby Hooper had to direct it.
Yeah.
Well, the Funhouse has a ton of suspense, and you always have that last half hour, the big chase. This is a really good one. I'll never forget that seeing it in the trailer. I don't remember when I first saw the trailer, but you know when the ladder slams down right in front of her while she's on the floor. That freaked me the hell out. Yeah. And it does in the context of a movie. It's a legit scary movie for this kind of flick.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I think so, yes.
I have the next film that I'm going to talk about is The Host. From
Good one.
I see, your thematics going on here.
The Korean film from Bong Joon-ho, who most recently directed Snowpiercer. This is a fantastic monster movie. I was so excited to see this movie when it was in college. It was like 2006. Probably came out in theaters like in 2007 by the time I saw it. But I saw like a trailer for it, and what I love about this movie is that the monster reveals itself so quickly. Like, you get some establishing of the characters, but once the monster's out there, it's not Jaws. It's not teasing the monster. The monster emerges from the water and runs rampant through, like, an open field in Korea and just, like, reveals everything it's capable of doing, where it's, like, this amphibious creature. It has a big old tail. It has these crazy legs, and it's just running rampant doing all kinds of stuff. The movie... It is technically horror because it's a monster movie, but there's a lot of comedic value in it, both from the kind of the family relationship going on here as they have to band together to rescue their kidnapped daughter, and the kind of the very overt social commentary going on as far as criticizing kind of America. There's the kind of the impetus of this film is based around a whole bunch of formaldehyde being dumped into the river. To the Han River, which is a giant river in Korea, which led to the creation of this giant creature, which is something that America actually was involved with a while back, and led to a lot of controversy. And this movie capitalizes on that by making this just brilliant film that's very emotional, occasionally funny, and just an awesome CG creature movie. We're talking about a lot of practical creatures and whatnot because they're very effective, but the way Bong Joon-ho is able to direct this film and how he puts forth his vision of a monster, it's incredibly effective despite being a CG creation. Like, it really works, and I think it comes from his skill as a director that doesn't engage in this kind of filmmaking as far as what he's presenting on screen normally. And it's something that's very effects heavy, but because of the way he knows how to place his camera and the kind of the amount of acclaim that he had, where he's able to secure a budget that can make a convincing visual effect the way it does, it just works. I mean, it's a little shoddy toward there's some fire based stunt work at the end that it's a little obvious in what it's the capabilities at that point, but aside from that, the movie holds up so well, and it's the amount of character work done for the family certainly helps in kind of investing you in what's going on here. I mean, this monster, there's not much there to give you much empathy towards it, despite it just being a kind of freak of nature type thing. But the family going against it certainly pulls at your heartstrings given how things play out in this movie. And I really, really like The Host a lot.
No, I nailed it right there. And a lot of it's the family, the strength of the family, and it's just a fun, for me, I just talked about Species, but there hadn't been anything like that in a while. Mm-hmm. When it came out, it was very unique.
It was
the time, and then they kept threatening to remake it in America. It's like, why don't you guys just go rent the original?
Yeah, there's
the dubbed version,
but there's also there's also the sequel they keep
just
talking about,
it.
Which still hasn't. I remember I've seen like a trailer like I feel like 2 years ago now, and there's like that sequel still never come out yet. So I'm like, I think it's supposed to be a prequel. So like I'm curious, but it's like, all right. Anyway, Brandon, what's your next pick?
I guess this movie is like 11 years old. I was going to say more recent, but I went with the Descent.
Ooh,
I was so close to picking that one.
That's on my backup list.
Yeah, Neil Marshall is one of my favorite working directors. I feel like I don't get enough from him, so I'm like.
He's been doing a lot of TV.
He does a lot of TV, but I mean, he's got some projects that have fallen off the wayside, but this was. My first, I didn't watch Dog Soldiers till after this, but
okay.
This was like just a great, it was good horror without the monsters, but the monsters themselves were creepy enough. These little things in the darkness, it was eerie. with them. And there's a lot of – the one thing I like about Neil Marshall that I've always said is nobody makes like his violence hurts. Like,
yes.
You sitting in your – when you're sitting in your seat, you feel everything that happens to a character on the screen. And he's amazing at that. And it's a real talent. It shines – I mean, you see that in Dog Soldier. You see it in The Descent. You see it in Doomsday. And you see it in, you know, Centurion. Like every time something bodily harm happens to somebody, it's not like just like, ooh, gross, or ooh, you know, just like gory, but it's like, ouch. Ooh, and you're like, I think, so, yeah, someone breaks a bone in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just like, ooh.
Oh, God.
But one of the more shocking moments for me is just right at the beginning when, you know, things that set everything up, essentially, where it's like, oh, this happened.
Oh,
and it's both, incredibly shocking and brutal for like how things play out right there.
And pretty freaking depressing, by the way. It's just, God, heartbreaking.
But, yeah, and it's got
again,
a
great characters.
Yeah, great characters you get on the backs of, and you know, makes the monsters even stronger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they call them the Crawlers.
Yeah,
is that what their official title is?
I think there's arguments for the Crawlers not even being real, which can add up pretty easily. To a point, mm-hmm. But there's also because I saw the movie in theaters, so it was the U.S. cut, which like it omits, right? It takes away like some further.
It takes away the very effective ending. Like had seen I got to see the original cut before the American cut, and
oh okay,
I was like, what did they do to the ending? Oh my God, because they made it like a jump scare ending instead.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Which is. I mean, it does, like the whole movie is so good, so it's like, all right, this is that's weird.
Yeah,
but now, but like,
I'm
certainly happy that I can watch the regular version, which you know goes on for a minute longer and is incredibly effective for what it's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And also,
so good.
And depressing, like you said, Jimmy. I mean, there's
it's depressing, but it also leaves you open to like interpretation of things more so than just the other ending.
And
like you were saying, like, there's yeah. Like you're saying, there's like, you know, there's the argument that the monsters aren't even there, and I think that comes even more with that other ending.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of great drama between the cast too. Like there's some
mm-hmm.
there's some really interesting mm-hmm. turns that are made because of certain discoveries going on during this spelunking adventure gone wrong. So.
Well, that's why a lot of these movies. I think the same with The Mist. You have these people that are at odds.
Yeah, the interpersonal
drama. It ratchets up the drama. Yeah, it makes the movie far more interesting because you're watching this. They're not only going through this horrible nightmare, they're reacting how people would. They would take it out on other people. Unfortunately, that is human nature. And both those movies, I think, really captured human nature. I think The Descent is a phenomenal film.
It's that
phenomenal
thing that goes back to Night of the Living Dead, where that type of motif, where it's not so much about the monsters, that the suspense and drama and stuff that's getting you at the edge of your seat is between the people, and then the monster just adds even more to that.
Because
you want to see these people figure out their own conflicts, and then you're like, oh, now there's a monster after them, so you know, are they going to be able to finish up said conflict or something? Like just having that in the air leads to even more suspense when something does happen to them.
Hey, what's your movie?
I agree.
What's your next pick, Abe?
Next pick is something that kind of blends a lot of genres, and we sort of talked about it last week too, but it'd be Predator, where essentially we talked about creature design and whatever else in Predator. I think John McTiernan's Predator, one was one where essentially, you didn't see the Predator for a really long period of time, and even when you did, you just saw his silhouette, or you saw a quick glimpse, and when you finally actually see the Predator without his cloaking device, he's an awesome-looking guy.
And he's got a mask on.
He still has a mask on.
He still has layers
to
him.
Yeah, a metal, like, warrior mask. And he takes it off, and all of a sudden, you know, he's got all different types of vision, whatever else, which is really neat to see.
Giant mandibles and all kinds of crazy things on his face.
Yeah, the mandibles, like the dreadlocks, like hair locks. You know, he's got like a whole bunch of, like, he's also played by like this guy who's like, how tall is he? Like 7 feet tall or something like that. I don't know about 7 feet tall, but
originally Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, it later replaced.
Was supposed to play him?
He did. They actually filmed. Yeah, they filmed like for a few
weeks. I do notice that because there was actually two renditions of drawings of what the Predator looked like, and then John McTiernan was like, "No, I need something that looks cooler." And
but
no, I think that there's
Kevin.
One...
Kevin Peter Hall is seven Kevin foot. Two. He was 7 foot two. He was quite large.
Oh, so he's 7'2". Yeah, he could have played.
He was also Harry and the Hendersons. He was also Harry from Harry and the Hendersons.
Which is also on my list of my, no, I'm just kidding. But yeah, as far as monsters go, I mean, this monster, sure, space genre, action, horror, sci-fi, whatever. But I mean, Predator has basically exceeded, I'm pretty sure, the wildest imaginations of John McTiernan, the guys who created like the Thomas Brothers or whatever. Yeah, Thomas Brothers. And I'm pretty sure it's exceeded the wildest imaginations of where this creature would take them. And it's shown up in video games, Mortal Kombat. It's shown up in, like, other crossover genres. It's got comic books. It's got toys. It has basically just been all over the place. And it is probably one of the best-known monsters in movie history and also just in comic lore and whatever else lore, so it's pretty amazing how far it's taken them.
It's something like it's like the Boba Fett of like monster movies, where it's just it's so cool. Like it's such a fantastic design that you really love this thing. You really love looking at this thing because of how unique it is, and it's also my favorite Expendables movie, if that matters.
Yeah,
that is true. With Schwarzenegger, Bill Duke.
Because the first half of this movie is a bunch of macho men go into the jungle to do some kind of mercenary mission. It's like, yeah, that's what Expendables should be, and it's over the top, and it's so clearly over the top. And then it turns into a monster hunt movie where it's like
which gets really good.
This thing that's better. It's this thing that's even better than them is challenging them to fight essentially. And it's like, yeah.
Like, no holds barred either. You know, that guy. Well, he fights fair too, because if no weapons, then he won't use any weapons.
Yeah,
but
he's
still
sports.
Got, like, monster strength. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, this is a creature that's not empathetic. I mean, this is one that's purposely come to Earth to hunt people.
So. Right. Trophy. There you go.
Good stuff. Another movie I need to watch again.
What you got, Jimmy?
Well, I'm going to go kind of – this is a movie that I do not hear a lot of people talk about, and I think it's incredibly underrated. It's kind of the low-budget little brother to The Thing, and it was shot in Oklahoma, so, the Harvesters thing. It's called Splinter.
Oh, I like
it's
Splinter.
It's Toby Wilkins. I love this movie, and it is gruesome. The monster is so hard to define because it is like The Thing, and the way it kind of takes the host and just – massacres their body into some bizarre like splinter type of thing, like with the these spikes coming out. This is a scary movie because it also follows that kind of Night of the Living Dead. They're trapped at a gas station,
yeah,
and they're having to fight off this thing. I think it was, isn't it a cop, the woman that shows up? That scene gets the hell! Oh
I'm
my god!
To remember, I haven't seen.
Someone shows up and the way she's gotten.
Yes, it's a
shit.
Yeah, it's a cop.
It's so brutal and so not a huge body count, but man, does this thing! It's a very creepy, atmospheric movie, and it's super short too.
It's like 80 minutes, but yeah, it's effective. What's his name? Shea Whigham's in here, and I love Shea Whigham. He's a great actor.
I do too, and it's this thing packs a punch. It's a really good little film that I don't think is a lot on people's. That people just don't know this film, and I think they should check it out. It's a very, very good film.
It's also
very
fun. It is fun. Mm-hmm. Like it's pretty sinister in like how it kind of goes about handling the violent aspect, but it's like a fun horror movie to watch.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Did you guys have seen it, right?
I've seen
Besides
it.
Besides Aaron?
Yeah.
I have not. That's on my list now.
Oh. It's a good.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really worth seeking out.
It's on Amazon Prime.
There you go.
There you go.
I think. Or not.
Regardless, good one to seek out because that's that one's worth it.
Yeah. Really good stuff.
The next film I have is The Babadook.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Now, what I've tried to do, as I said, was kind of go across the different spectrums of horror. And I've talked about King Kong, which, you know, it's all about the design of the monster and what it's doing there. The Godzilla goes into like political commentary. The Host, it's a foreign filmmaker doing a monster movie and has other political subtext or what have you. Jimmy, you brought up The Mist, and that's its own. That goes into like interpersonal drama in the midst of a giant monster movie taking place. The Babadook is a film that falls into another kind of category of monster movie for me, where it's kind of internal monsters. Now, obviously, there's the Babadook. There's a look to this thing, and there is a creature of sorts, but there's a strong argument for whether or not there actually is a creature involved. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the movie is a very, it's a big parable about grief. And the lead character, Essie Davis, who damn well should have gotten an Oscar nomination for how good she is in this movie.
Amen, dude. Absolutely. 100% agree.
One of the best lead heroine horror performances, and let alone just acting performances, I've seen in quite some time, as far as just the kind of emotion and what she's going through in this movie. She's grieving over the loss of her husband, and she has this son who, he's young, and the kind of he has all this energy, and it's dealing with both, the loss of his father and the fact that, he's a young child. There's mm-hmm. a lot of responsibility to try to keep him under control. And one way to look at it is that it manifests itself into the mother, Essie Davis's character, creating this thing, although it could just be there actually is a Babadook, this kind of sinister being that is both a terrible storyteller and a horrible menace on this family.
a terrible storyteller.
what I get to with this one, why this is different, is because along with having, this kind of monster involved, there's a psychological element. And that I think that applies to another section of kind of monster movies where you have an internal monster. I mean, like Abe, we just saw this year, 10 Cloverfield Lane. That's a movie that there could or could not be something outside of this bunker that everyone's trapped in. But the real monster, as the tagline suggests, is John Goodman's character. I mean, he's nothing more than a human being, but he becomes this crazy antagonist. And
spoiler alert.
I mean,
I haven't seen it.
You need to at least wait a year, man.
Jeez.
But you look at the Babadook, and yeah, there's a number of ways to take it, but it very much relies not on how scary the actual Babadook is, but just how horrifying the situation that Essie Davis is in, and what kind of goes along with all that. And so in addition to being, a horror film, it's just a wonderful character study and just fantastic all around. Cool. I hope for great things from director Jennifer Kent, by the way. Like that, she really nailed.
Me too.
Another Blu-ray release with a pop-up image on uh-huh. the case.
And I pre-ordered that book like 2 years ago. So,
oh yeah,
and it's finally getting shipped. So like I'll be getting that, but because they like handmade like thousands of these Babadook books. Right. So like I can't wait to finally get that.
Where the story keeps changing on you.
Yeah. And if you want to hear more about the Babadook, feel free to listen to my mom and I talk about it on a previous bonus episode of this podcast.
Yeah, there you go. Mom's Movie Corner.
That's right.
Ooh, nice.
Brandon, you got another pick?
I do. I've got
last ones, guys.
Yep, I went with something deep track, little scene. It's a movie from 1988 called Scarecrows.
Oh
my God, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Good choice. Good choice.
It's kind of just different. It's got these cool little scarecrow monsters in it. And it's about a group of like these criminals. Like they get stranded out in this farm area, and they've basically got some sort of MacGuffin they're going for, and like they're getting picked off one by one by these like killer scarecrow. Mm-hmm. And it's just a good measure. Like characters are kind of like stereotypical. Stock characters, but there's really good talent behind the camera with like some suspense and gore effects, and it works despite just kind of being simple as it is. But it's just this really cool movie, and like there's a lot of like there is and isn't like a lot of like scarecrow movies. I know people like Dark Knight of the Scarecrow and things like that, but like this was a really cool take on them, a good use, and just kind of a fun movie. that
I agree. It's
pretty short. There's nobody really in it that's, you know, too recognizable at all. And it was just this little production. But it's a pretty awesome little movie. I went back and forth between this one. I'll just mention it quickly. Husk from a few years back.
That's a good one too.
That was pretty good. Husk ended up like, I think it went to TV, but it was actually shot for theatrical release. And there's an unrated like cut of it that was naturally that way, let's add some CG stuff.
You'd think more could be done with scarecrows. Like, that seems like an inherently scary thing that you could do a lot with in a movie.
Yeah, I mean, Batman.
I blame Jeepers Creepers. It's all Jeepers Creepers' fault. He ruined it for everyone.
Jeepers Creepers 2.
Yeah, exactly. Both of them.
Abe, what's your next pick?
Last pick here for this podcast, at least, is it's another animated movie. It's called Monster House from 2006.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like it's underseen, but that could just be me.
No, it was underseen. It wasn't a
huge... It was popular, but then went away real fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know that this was, 2006, so it was kind of during what people might consider the first phase of Pixar, where everything was super awesome and intriguing and unique. But this movie is also super awesome, intriguing, and unique in that it's this house that everybody knows is kind of haunted and you don't really want to go by it. But as you get deeper into the story, it actually becomes this really sad story about Steve Buscemi's character, Mr.
Nevercracker.
Nevercracker, thank you. How he basically his dead wife's soul or spirit is still living in the house, so he can't really let it go, and he knows that it's bad, and he doesn't want to basically demolish it or leave the house because it's the last little bits of his wife, which actually is super depressing.
There's some up in this.
There is, yeah. Mm. Which came out the next year or something like that.
This was 2006, Up was 2009, but you can see the kind of the seeds planted. But this,
similarities. Yeah.
I mean, you're mentioning. I mean, this was during when the motion capture really started motion capture animated films started taking off. This was in that area.
Wasn't the El Capitan showing it in 3D? And this is before the 3D.
Yeah, this was a 3D. I saw this in 3D. It was a 3D.
Yeah,
it was a 3D release.
3D release. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was pre-Avatar 3D. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, the animation is actually not bad. It's not like Blue Sky animation where they decided to try and go, you know, we'll go with angular lines and whatever else for all these saber-toothed tigers and whatever the case. This is actually pretty decent animation for its time, and it still kind of holds up today, even though you can kind of see some of the rounded blocks and whatever else.
Well, because opposed to Polar Express and other Zemeckis films, it didn't try to kind of... It wasn't going for real. It very much had a stylized look to it, so it didn't
Had a stylized look with human characters, sure, but it wasn't as though everyone needed to look like motion capture Tom Hanks or rotoscoping, you know, back in the Lord of the Rings animated days. But for the most part, it's actually a pretty good movie where, again, these three kids are trying to investigate what's going on with this house, and as you delve deeper into it, Steve Buscemi's character becomes actually almost somebody that you have a lot of sympathy for.
There. Almost.
Well, you do have a lot of sympathy for him. He's got a dent in the house. He's the one that has to destroy it.
All right, Jimmy, what's your next pick?
Well, see, now there's two that I have. I think I'm going to go with this one. It hasn't come out yet. It comes out. It was supposed to come out this month. It's actually not coming out till November, but I think it's November, actually. Oh, wait. Now they have it January 2017. A Monster Calls. It's a new film. It's about a young man whose mom is dying. And one day, a monster comes to his door. And it is one of the most heartbreaking, heart-wrenching, beautiful movies I've seen this year. It's Felicity Jones. It's phenomenal. Toby Kebbell, without makeup, for once. Sigourney Weaver is phenomenal. Lewis McDougall is fantastic as he carries this film expertly, and of course you have the monster, which is Liam Neeson, and it is kind of a tree monster, you could say Groot, but it is a very different thing. I love this film a lot, and I know it opened at TIFF, and a lot of people got to see it. There's a lot of buzz on it. It is a miraculous film. It's one that I don't think will. It's hard because it's a very adult themed film. It's dealing with a very tragic situation, mm-hmm. but. Oh, man, it reminds me of an old movie called, and I don't know if you guys remember this one, called Paper House.
I know
Paper I think that's House. The closest thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of that, because it is a children's story, in a sense, it is a fable, but it is such a fantastic movie, and it's got a lot of heart. And again, man, Felicity Jones is really killing it, and she's fantastic in this. But, you know, again, Sigourney Weaver, this is an amazing cast, and it's a beautiful film, and I very rarely react emotionally to a film, but this one got me all the feelsies. I was really feeling it, and it's a beautiful film. I wish it was opening now in October, because I think it'd be a really cool Halloween film to see. Oh, even though it's not necessarily a scary film.
It's got an awards bait release date now, so I think they're doing just fine with what they want to do with it, yeah. It seems.
Yeah, I think, well, and honestly, yes, I could easily see a few nominations. I absolutely think this, Lewis, I think he should get an Oscar nomination. It's one of the best kids' performance I've seen in a long time. He's wonderful. This is a fantastic movie. And I know it's not necessarily your average Oscar bait movie, but man, it is worth seeking out. When you guys get a chance, go see A Monster Calls. Wonderful.
Cool.
My lovely girlfriend and I are currently reading the book. We're almost done with it, and I am very aware of the kind of emotional devastation that's going to be happening.
Yeah, I don't know, dude. I don't know if I could read the book. I think that would kill me.
The book is very – I'm very much enjoying the book so far, and I can't wait to finally be able to see this movie with Anna, as we've been very much anticipating it for quite some time now. The last movie that I have here, because you used The Mist, so I got to go with one of my backups, and I'm going to go with this one because, Abe, you asked about this, you know, the perspective, and we talked about this way early, you know, from a monster's perspective. Darkman.
Interesting.
And I also have on this list Hellboy, which is, you know, similar in its own way, where it's you are following the monster in these scenarios. And Darkman is essentially is Sam Raimi's, after not being able to do The Shadow, he made his own superhero, and it combines his love for, you know, old Universal horror films, mainly Frankenstein, and with the 30s pulp hero character type thing to make this a Frankenstein mashup into a superhero movie. And you just mentioned Liam Neeson, Jimmy. So Liam Neeson's here as Darkman, as a Peyton Westlake. Peyton Westlake, and the film, it very much goes away from the kind of, you know, traditional thoughts of what a monster movie is. But I mean, we've said how, you know, it's a very broad genre, and this one obviously is.
Mm-hmm.
It has a share of like horror and comedic elements. As well as action, and so, you know, it has become this mashup thing. But it is a kind of a nightmare situation for Neeson's character, who he's, you know, blown up by a mobster, and, you know, now possesses, like, he has his nerves are all like fried or whatnot. So he has like a sort of super strength of sorts. But he also has this, you know, his face is horribly, you know, disfigured. Phantom of the Opera also, kind of, as far as, you know, what movies it's trying to mash up. And as a result, he can make masks, but he can only use them for so long before, you know, having to take them off and having just his ugly, horrible face again. But it does provide us this perspective of the monster. It gives us, you know, a look at what this character is and what he has to go through. And obviously, it's, you know, it's very much sensationalized for the purpose of being a grand action film where the hero has to rescue the girl, who is Frances McDormand in this situation, from the evil Larry Drake. Rest in peace. but it's a very fun movie, but it's also a really interesting play on the kind of a Frankenstein type situation. Mm. Any other
good stuff?
Any other like runner or other movies you had in mind that you could have?
Well, the last minute, I really wish I would have mentioned this. So I guess I'll mention it now. Probably one of the best monster movies of all time. There is no argument here. Is An American Werewolf in London. It is brilliant. If you have not seen it, it's werewolf, but it's also weird Nazi monsters. It's fantastic as a comedy, but also as a horror film because it's legit scary. Fantastic film. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Makeup and practical effects, A+.
See, that's a film.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that scene, to me, is still better than pretty much 99% of what you see on film today.
I think it's the best werewolf transformation ever. I'm surprised that there aren't films that have been able to top this werewolf transformation.
Yeah, I agree.
The only thing that's come close for me is that Netflix
Wolf Cop?
Wolf Cop. That Netflix series that Eli Roth produced.
Okay. There's the Beast Within had a pretty cool transformation. It's nowhere near.
Oh yeah, that was good too.
What's that? Like the Howling.
Well, I also
the Howling was
the
like
Howling
the
is great.
It's the same
year.
The Howling. It's like the same year as early.
Yeah.
But like I just American Werewolf in London is so good, and so like just because he, you know, the acting that's going on within all of that really sells how much of a horrifying situation this is.
Yeah. And not only that, there's actually a lot of like sarcastic humor from his dead friend that shows up throughout, who's continuously rotting, which I always found scary as a child. But now that I think back on it, it's like he's actually, you know, he's like eating sandwiches and whatever else, and he's actually just a funny guy.
Well, it's a movie that
Playing with a Mickey Mouse.
It's funny. It's a property they messed with one time, and we're like, okay, we're just gonna put it back. In terms of like sequels, reboots, or whatever, they you know in the 90s during the Scream era they had American Werewolf in Paris and
with Tom Everett Scott,
Tom Everett,
and Julie Delpy,
that movie,
Delpy, and they popped it out, it failed, and they just never have. I think they're threatening to remake it again, but we'll see.
American Werewolf
they need
in
to
Madrid.
Stop. they need to stop this. That is a movie that is, I don't ever want to see someone try and remake it. I think that would be horrible, just horrible on every level.
I had a number of things that I could have mentioned. Like Frankenstein, Jaws, The Thing, The Fly, and Alien all obviously came to mind for clear reasons.
Yeah, those are ones that we would all kind of think about.
I kind of stayed away from like traditional monsters, you know. I was trying to go with some like oddball different things than because you were right off the bat you were like no vampires.
I didn't say no vampires. I'm just saying I personally tried to avoid vampires.
No, you did. You actually said if you say a vampire movie, I will beat you up.
It's been a long show.
Yes. Yeah,
I had Tobe Hooper's Life Force as a possibility, but like we brushed on that with a. When we talk about the Fun House, and then I kind of pondered about speaking of remakes, Werner Herzog's Nosferatu, monster type feel of the Dracula story.
I considered that one just because it's vampires, but it is like that it's a monstrous vampire type of situation where it's like
and it's just a haunting movie.
It is
like sort of like lifelike quality that that the Hammer movies brought to horror, but it's done in such it's a scary freaking movie.
I had one where I was kind of curious what you guys think about it. It didn't make my list, but would you guys consider Krampus the one from just last year? Would that be?
Oh, absolutely!
Yeah, yeah,
that's a monster movie.
Sure, yeah.
An old tale kind of thing, or
it's monsters. It's a bunch of monsters. It's Krampus itself is a monster.
Yeah. I mean, we could have there's a Hammer film called The Gorgon, which went by my it's like a Medusa. Basically, Medusa is a Gorgon. They're like the snakehead monsters, and that went brushed by my thoughts.
Well, my thing was I wanted to avoid.
Well, we could have done Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the Titans.
Tons of monsters. I'm not talking about that crappy remake. I'm talking about the 80s Harry Hamlin movie.
Yeah, the Harryhausen, like the Jason the Argonauts with all the skeletons and stuff. Yeah.
See, I was trying to avoid ones that brush up with genres, which is what, there's a lot of horror comedies that you could easily put on here, but I just tried to stay away from. Another one I consider was Jurassic Park as well.
Yeah,
that's clearly a monster movie. I mean, it's Spielberg, but it's still, it's a bunch of crazy dinosaurs going after people.
I mean, like Jaws as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But I kind of threw those with the nature attacks kind of movies too. It could be that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the fact that we covered so many. I mean, we went from, part slasher movies to classics like Predator to a recent movie that hasn't even come out yet, an Oscar movie, to Monster House, to Coraline. I like that we kind of went in all the Babadook. I like that we went in different ranges with this. And I love that you brought up The Host. I thought that was really cool because it's a great movie. I don't think a lot of people have necessarily seen The Host, too, even though, it did really well. It's one that I think, like The Mist, a lot of modern audiences may have not discovered yet.
Mm-hmm. More should see The Host, as they should Splinter, because that's a solid pick, Jimmy.
Yeah, I even have Absolutely. One. Yeah, I have one here I've written down now.
Nice. All right. Nice.
So I think we've effectively covered monster movies for this week's bonus genre horror episode. So, I should say next week we plan to cover found footage movies.
Oh, snap.
Found footage.
Wait, we have to come up with five good ones?
Yes.
That's going to be tough. That is going to be tough.
Not for me, it isn't. I can rattle off probably 10 right now that I really enjoy, but we'll get there.
I probably could too.
There will probably be a lot of overlap in that episode. I'll say that much. But we'll see. We'll see because there's a lot of creative ideas I think that come out of that. But for now, that's been this week's episode. Where can people find everyone's work online? Let's go to Brandon first.
Cult Cinema Cavalcade, which is cultcinemacavalcade.com. We're doing horror movies. Our next episode is going to pop up Monday for Death Spa, which is a great little 80s romp. We have the Girls from the Back Row podcast are guessing on that one. And then we will have a special Halloween episode, which maybe that movie will be in my found footage discussion.
Jimmy?
You can find me on joeblow.com, arrowintheheadcom. You can find me on Flicks for Fans. You can find me as a producer of a new film coming out called The Harvesters, which you can see on October 18th. You can find me on Facebook, yada, yada, all that. I'm either under James Oster or Jimmy to the O.
Use the Google machine. You can find me at Instagram, Twitter, and on this podcast.
You can find me on thecodeofzeke.com. You can find me on Twitter at Aaron's PS4. You can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe over on iTunes and Audio Boom, as well as everywhere else. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/outnowpodcast, twitter.com/outnow_podcast, and be sure to email us your thoughts on monster movies, your favorite one and why, over at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. This has been another fun recording, guys. We covered a lot of ground in this one.
A lot of ground, yeah. A lot of genre.
Really did.
Yeah. And I look forward to continuing. We have three more of these to do, and this is going to be a lot of fun to keep doing. So thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks. Fun.
For sure. And until next week, when we cover some more horror goodness, that's going to do it. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
To my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It got on in a flash.
The monster mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires sleep, all the ghouls came from their humble abodes to get a jolt from my electrode.